It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. People are still freaking out over Facebook changing its algorithm. And I guess they're going to make multiple changes because they are tired, I guess, of people not connecting deeper, right? So what is the point of having 1,000 friends on Facebook if you're only really connecting with 2 or 3 or 4 of them? And so what they're doing is, and for you guys who don't know this, they are eliminating the organic ability to see everybody's posts, I guess. You know, so let me see if I can put this in a different way. So if you have 1,000 friends on Facebook, but you're only interacting with 3 or 4 or 5 of those on a regular basis on what they call a meaningful level, then you're really only going to see or continue to see those 4 or 5 people that you interact with. So it's pointless to have 1,000 friends. Now, if you are a marketer, that could be bad because a lot of marketers like to promote their stuff organically on Facebook. And Facebook's saying no more of that. You have to pay for the traffic. So they're going to limit commercial type traffic. And I think that's both good and bad. It's bad because it means it's going to make, our commercial posts, our stuff regarding our company, selling our products or services, much harder to find. But it's going to be good because it's going to make more people either leave Facebook, more promoters leave Facebook, and they're going to have to learn the game of Facebook marketing or Facebook advertising, which is going to kill off a bunch of people because marketing on Facebook is not the easiest thing to do. So if you're a business person, if you're a marketer, you have nothing to worry about. If you are one of those individuals that believes that, hey, I want to promote for free and grow my organic traffic and all that other good stuff, then you're hosed. And you can find out more about that at BertMartinez.com. I'm putting together a very lengthy article about that. So go to BertMartinez.com, check it out, and let me know what you think. All right. Today on the show, William F. Underwood III, a.k.a. Trey. He's a personal injury and workers' compensation attorney from Albany, Georgia. Trey began practice at the Daugherty County District Attorney's Office. English is my second language. So anyway, the Daugherty County District Attorney's Office in 2007, and later joined his father's firm in 2009, where he began representing injured workers. Trey is a past president of the Daugherty Judicial Circuit Bar Association, a graduate of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Lead Program, and the past chair of the General Practice and Trial Section of the State Bar of Georgia. He currently serves as the Daugherty Judicial Circuit on the State Bar of Georgia Board Governors. He's a native of Albany, Georgia, where he resides, and in 2017, he was inducted for his legal service into America's Most Trusted Lawyers. Trey Underwood, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, thank you for having me today.
You bet. And how badly did I kill that name? Daugherty is not, is it Daugherty? It's not.
It's I guess with a southern accent, it's pronounced Darty is how I say it. But it was a good shot there. You gave it a good try.
Oh yeah, man. Well, you know, between the southern thin and the second language being English, you know, we'll make it happen. It'll all work out.
it was a good try. Close enough. That sounded fine. Darty, yeah.
Yeah, Darty.
How are things with you?
Man, you know what? We're loving it here. I don't know what the winters are like in Albany, Georgia, but here we're loving it at, you know, this morning, you know, it was what we consider freezing. It was 35 or 37 degrees, and now it's, you know, 70 degrees, so life is good. What are things like in Albany?
They are actually for us. It's pretty cold. We have had some snow recently, which is very unusual, and it's been down in the 20s and 30s. We are normally around. We're up in the 50s and 60s normally this time of year, and so we've had an unusual cold spell recently, and a lot of people are sick, and everybody's been dealing with that, but. Hopefully it'll warm up here shortly and get back to typical seasonal weather.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, I'm glad to have you on the show and be able to talk to you about personal injury law and you know, you and I spoke, we got together, was it September of last year there in, Nashville, Tennessee. And so I'm looking forward to today's conversation, you know, since it's been, you know, since September, since we've had a chance to chat. But I think that, you know, like a lot of businesses, people aren't sure of, you know, what, a, you know, they hear personal injury lawyer. And of course they acquaint, they acquaint personal injury lawyers with these guys on TV and they hear all these misleading verdicts, you know, of course, nothing as famous as the McDonald's coffee case, you know, and then of course, you know, you would call it, it's a sensational verdict, but of course nobody ever goes deeper than that. They just make it sound like, oh, you know, this person spilled coffee and got a bunch of money. And of course, they don't realize that individual and had numerous operations and McDonald's, the background of that case and how McDonald's behaved and all that other stuff. They just think that personal injury attorneys make money, you know, almost for nothing. And in fact, and then to make it worse, you have the insurance industry that really panders to that. They really promote that propaganda that, hey, if it wasn't for personal injury attorneys, your insurance rates would be so much lower, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And they've done the insurance industry's done a phenomenal job with pushing that message over the past couple of decades, unfortunately. And it's gone so far as to, you know, the term trial lawyer has a negative connotation now with a lot of people, and a lot of trial lawyer groups have changed their names. And for example, the American Association of Trial Lawyers has changed to the American Association for Justice, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I think, you know, it shows that we, you know, our emphasis is on getting justice for our clients and doing what's right for people and not right for an insurance company's bottom line. It's interesting that you brought up the McDonald's case because I believe that case was based out of New Mexico, and that was just a headline bumper sticker kind of case that everybody can say, oh, you can spill coffee on yourself and get millions of dollars, when in reality, there was a lot more to that case. There's a great documentary. I can't remember the filmmaker's name, but there's a documentary that the name of it's Hot Coffee, and it goes into detail in that case and a number of other cases. And the reality behind the McDonald's case, they were parked in a parking spot. The lady that burned herself was not driving. She was a passenger. I think her son or nephew had parked the car, and she was trying to make her coffee and spilled it on herself. Had third-degree burns, very severe and just bad burns. And offered with McDonald's prior to litigation, prior to filing a lawsuit, offered to, if they would just pay her medical bills, she would go away. And
right.
So, that led to a lot of litigation and of course, that famous verdict. The other thing about it is they didn't even collect on that verdict. I mean, that was the punitive damages award was reduced by the New Mexico Supreme Court, and I think they ended up collecting a fraction of what the actual verdict was. I think they collected several hundred grand, I think, was the final, what they actually collected. But I think the punitive award got cut down by the New Mexico Supreme Court. So that's typical. You hear about these big verdicts and sensational verdicts, but what's actually collected sometimes is a fraction of the the actual verdict is.
Sure, but this is the thing that people do not understand until they're having to deal with it themselves. So you're right. People make everybody talks about, nowadays you spill your coffee on yourself and you get millions of dollars, and that's the headline and the cooler talk. But the like you said, people did not understand that this lady, all she wanted, and I think the amount was like $22,000. That's surgery, medical expenses, I mean, $22,000 worth of surgery. Worth of medical expenses. And to put this in proper perspective for me, I don't know about you, Trey, but, there is no amount of money that you can give me where I would take, 120 degree scalding liquid and pour around my crotch. And this is exactly what happened to her. And so she had multiple surgeries, but and bottom line is, this is the kind of stuff that is twisted by the news, twisted by the insurance company. And if it wasn't for her attorney, and if it wasn't for the fact that this lady had enough self-confidence and self-belief that she knew that she deserved better than this. There are a lot of people who are injured, but they don't, they think that getting an attorney is going to be expensive. They think that getting an attorney is not going to, to help them. They have all these misconceptions, and bottom line is they suffer in silence. And then nobody gets their nobody hears their case, their statute of limitations runs dry, and bottom line is they suffer with the injury for the rest of their lives, when all they could have done is picked up the phone and at least gotten a free consultation and say, these are your options, this is what we could do, or whatever. And again, this lady, all she wanted, like you said, was her medical expenses reimbursed, and McDonald's, a multi-billion-dollar corporation, said no. Multiple times, even after she hired an attorney, they said, no, we're not going to give you anything.
Yeah, and we see it time and time again. And in that case, McDonald's had been warned numerous times about the excessive temperature of their coffee, and that was one of the things that came out during trial that that her attorneys brought out for her, that McDonald's across the country had received numerous complaints about the coffee being brewed and being kept at a temperature that was that would cause those types of burns, and they knew that, and so that came out. But it's not uncommon. Yeah, we get calls every day from people who think that they don't need an attorney, they're just kind of fishing around and they're trying to shop around, and that's fine. And one good thing about personal injury lawyers and workers' compensation lawyers in general is that we typically, all of us, offer free consultations. We work on a contingency fee basis, so it doesn't cost anything for a potential client to come in and have a strategy session about his or her case and discuss the you know, legal ramifications of what may happen to them if the case goes on, or if they, you know, if they decide to pursue it or not. So a lot of things that people don't take into account, like you mentioned, statutes, limitations, you know, evidence that disappears, witnesses that disappear, multiple layers of insurance coverage. There are a lot of things that an attorney can help sort out for you that people may not know if they haven't been in this kind of situation before. You know, anti-litem notices, that's a big deal. That's kind of a, you know, if you have a claim against a government entity, there are certain time frames where you have a shorter amount of time to put that government entity on notice before you even may have to file a lawsuit. For example, in Georgia with a municipality, you only have 6 months to notify the municipality if you have a claim against it. And, of course, you have 2 years from the date of the incident to file a lawsuit. But if you don't put that municipality on notice within 6 months, then you lose the right to file the lawsuit. So from the moment that something happens to you, that if you're injured due to the negligence of somebody else, I mean, the clock's running, the clock's ticking, and the longer somebody waits, generally the worse things become. It doesn't get better by putting it off and delaying contacting an attorney.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about this. I mean, let's kind of dive into this a little bit deeper. So what are the first things someone should do after he or she has been injured in a car crash? I mean, you know, this happens to us maybe once or twice in our lifetime, and so I always think ill-prepared for it. So kind of walk us through this from your perspective. What should I or anybody else do right after a car accident?
Sure. Well, it depends on the severity of the accident. Of course, if it's an extremely severe accident, somebody you know, may be transported by ambulance, may not be conscious, and may, you know, wind up in the hospital post-surgery or you know, not have time to document things. If it's a more minor collision, then I think the most important thing is to clearly document starting with the police officers and then the witnesses at the scene. If they're witnesses, make sure that those witnesses give their information to the police officer that works the crash, if you're able to.
Right.
We've had a number of cases where we're able to find witnesses from 911 tapes that were not on the crash report and, you know, not otherwise known to our clients. So I would make sure witness information is documented. Make sure the police officers and the EMTs know the extent of your injuries. You know, if you're shaken up, if you're sore, if you have if you're having pain, get checked out. Get medical treatment. Don't delay and wait on that. It's frequent that, you know, if somebody's rear-ended and it's a kind of a moderate to minor crash, they'll put off getting treated, and then they'll wake up the next day or 2 days or 3 days later and be stiff, or they'll think it's going to go away, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And then finally they seek medical treatment. But that's one of the things that the insurance company holds against them. They want to throw that back in somebody's face and say, well, if you were injured so badly, why did you wait 3 days to go to the doctor? In fact, I think some states, I think Florida and some other states, have time limitations now where if you don't seek treatment within a specific amount of time, then you're barred from pursuing a claim or claiming that medical treatment and those expenses as a result of the wreck. So that's all the more reason it's important to, to seek legal advice soon after a wreck or something happens where you're injured. So I definitely, you know, document your injuries, seek medical attention. A common mistake that we see is that people think that their health insurance should not be billed if somebody else is at fault. It's actually better if health insurance is billed. Health insurance carriers, whether, you know, if it's Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE, Blue Cross Blue Shield, whoever the insurer is, they have what's called a subrogation claim on the case. So with Medicare, for example, we deal with Medicare all the time, reimbursing Medicare for amounts that they've paid. But it's better for your case if you have the medical provider bill your health insurance carrier, and then we can reimburse them later a fraction of what the actual bill is, versus if the health provider, say they have a $10,000 bill, it's better for Medicare to pay a fraction of that and us reimburse Medicare than paying the $10,000 balance or close to that out of the settlement. So that's the common issue, a common thing that we see, that is a misconception. The other thing is, talk to an attorney, see what kind of insurance coverage is available. Underinsured motorist coverage and uninsured motorist coverage is often overlooked by people that have been in wrecks that aren't familiar with the process. If the person that caused the wreck was on the job or working for somebody else at the time, where there could be potentially be another layer of liability coverage that we could go after. So you want to explore, and make sure that you discover and root out all the possible insurance coverages that are available. In Georgia, with underinsured motorist coverage, you can not only cover if the car that you're in has uninsured motorist coverage, but if you pay the premiums for any automobile, that could potentially provide more coverage for you on top of the at-fault driver's coverage, and also resident relatives. If you live with any relatives, their underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage can possibly be stacked on top of the liability coverage to provide even more coverage to you. So the scary thing about that is, Georgia courts have upheld that the time frames and time limits that they put in these contracts, if you don't notify the UM carrier within a certain amount of days or weeks, whatever's in the contract, then you could lose that claim and lose your right to recover that coverage. So you want to notify your insurance agent of the wreck immediately and just document your injuries. Make sure you get the treatment that you need.
Yeah, I have come across people that, and this is, typically older folks who feel that there's a stigma getting a lawyer, as though they're, claiming weakness or not weakness or something like that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, some of these older people
right.
have this weirdness about lawyers and that it's almost like a sign of weakness that you're getting an attorney, and it obviously it's not like that. And then the other thing, and this sounds silly, but I can tell you from my personal experience, here I am for years paying on my auto insurance, just like everybody else does. Like all of us, we hope we never have to use it, right? We just want to be able to complain about it. But I'm in this accident. It's this young lady's fault. Unfortunately, it's like a 4 or 5 or 6 car pileup. And bottom line is, when something like this happens, it gets very complex. And insurance carriers like, oh, listen, we have like five cars. There's like 15, 20 people involved. We're not going to make any payments yet because we don't know how much money we're going to have to pay all this. And so, but bottom line is, personal medical pay or whatever called med pay.
Oh, right.
And
right.
And so what's interesting is here I am, I've been paying on this policy for years. I didn't know what I had. I didn't know even how to use it.
Yeah.
And it just cracked
yeah.
me up how sometimes as consumers we're completely blind to what our coverage is.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that agents don't do a better job, insurance agents don't do a better job of explaining what type of coverage somebody is actually getting. I hear a lot of clients and potential clients say, oh, well, I have full coverage. Well, full coverage to an agent typically means you have liability coverage and collision and comprehensive, and that's it. And those three coverages are to protect your car and everybody else. None of those coverages, as you may know from your experience, none of those coverages go to protect you or the people in your car. The only two types of coverage that protect you and protect the people in your car or medical payments coverage and uninsured motorist coverage. And a lot of agents, I think they just do a poor job of explaining that. And you're paying premiums for it each month. A lot of people, you're paying premiums if you purchase that. It's optional insurance in Georgia, whether you want to purchase uninsured motorist coverage or medical payments coverage. You're not required to have it. But medical payments coverage is great. I mean, it's up to a certain limit, you different increments, 1,000, 2,000, 5. I think you can have up to 50,000 in Georgia, and it'll pay all your medical bills regardless of whether or not you're at fault for the wreck. So with medical payments coverage, you could actually go run into a telephone pole and have 50, that could be completely your fault. And if you have $50,000 in medical payments coverage, that's going to pay and be primary and pay before your health insurance would kick in. So, and the other difference is it'll pay 100% of the bill, whereas your health insurance, you're probably going to, there'll be a write-off and then you'll get balance billed. So medical payments coverage is great. I think they should sell more of it. And those are the kind of things a lawyer can point out to you time and time again. People don't even realize the lack of coverage that they have or how much coverage they do have if they have medical payments and uninsured motorist coverage.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And, and I think part of the problem is it's very possible that my insurance agent told me all this, but, it was like years ago.
Right,
And as long as, and as long as my, my insurance premiums are being paid, my insurance agent has no reason to call me. which is his fault. I mean, he should send me a letter and saying, hey, do you know how to use your insurance or, something? But no contact. And then so if you sell insurance and you haven't contacted your auto customers, shame on you. You should do that. At least you build that relationship, because ultimately, whether you're a personal injury attorney or you sell insurance, it comes down to that relationship.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm assuming maybe they don't make a big commission off selling medical payments or uninsured motorist coverage, because there's not really any follow-up. And like you said, I mean, it's once the policy's written and once if the premiums are being paid, then out of sight, out of mind. But it's something that I think people don't realize how much they need it until something happens. I mean, our minimum limits for liability coverage are $25,000, and it doesn't take too severe of a wreck and a hospital bill to wipe out $25,000 in policy limits for liability coverage. So if somebody doesn't have any uninsured motorist coverage or underinsured motorist coverage, then it's a bad spot to be in if you're in a pretty bad wreck, because $25,000 may be all that you're getting. Or even worst case scenario, if the person that hits you doesn't have any coverage, then you may not be getting anything. That's the other an even worse spot to be in. Another thing you were asking about. What's important to do after a wreck? Another thing an attorney could help find out is whether or not there's a potential products liability case. If something happened to the ignition switch, or if a tire blew out, a tire defect or some other type of defect. If there's a road defect, if the car hydroplaned and it's a place where the hydroplaning had been an issue and the state hadn't corrected the problem or knew about the problem, there are other potential avenues of recovery that a layperson may not realize are out there. If the car, even in single car accidents, if there's a tire defect or some other type of problem that the car manufacturer knew about and that caused the wreck, then there may be a products liability case. I think that's often overlooked.
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, the lesson here is, just pick up the phone and get an opinion, right? Bounce it off somebody and find out what your rights are and what's going on before it's too late. Like you said, and this is very common. I think it's just human nature to you know, to say, oh, you know what, I got a sore neck or a stiff back. I'm just gonna, you know, I'm just gonna let it relax. I'm gonna work it off. I'm gonna do whatever. And I think it's kind of a human nature type of thing. We think our body's gonna get better, and then all of a sudden, 3, 4, 5 days later, you know, you go from a stiff neck to now you're limping, and things aren't getting better. It's good to find out what's going on, and it doesn't hurt to be informed, I guess, is the ultimate conclusion there.
Sure.
I want to ask you about this as well. Again, we have a lot of people on the show who are not only just employees, but they own the company and stuff like that. So I want to talk about workman's comp.
Okay.
Let's talk about, you know, workman's comp from an employee's standpoint of view. Here I am, I'm working for the boss, I get hurt. What should I do after an injury on the job?
I would say the number one thing is make sure you report it, and report it to your supervisor. Know who your supervisor is. I can't tell you how many times it's unclear. I mean, a lot of jobs, who somebody's supposed to report to, you know, their immediate boss or the boss above that boss. Make sure the injury is reported. Make sure it's documented. Preferably a written report will be done. And make sure you document every single body part that's injured or that's causing you pain. A lot of body parts, as you may know, injuries can, symptoms can overlap. You know, if you have numbness, pain, tingling, radicular pain in your arm or fingers or hand, that could be a neck problem. And it may just be a shoulder issue, or a shoulder injury could really be a neck problem, and you think it's a shoulder injury. So make sure that every body part's documented, make sure it's reported, and reported to a supervisor, and that a written report is done. The sooner you can get medical treatment, the better. And make sure, you know, I run into situations on occasion and fairly frequently that, employers don't want to put it, don't want to report it to workers' comp. I would encourage employees and employers as well, I mean, to insist on having it put under workers' comp and having the comp coverage pay to send the injured worker to a doctor. It's beneficial from the employer's standpoint that they can control the medical treatment. You know, if I get in the case, if the employer's denied medical treatment to the injured worker, and the injured worker then goes to his or her own doctor and gets medical treatment elsewhere, and we're able to get the claim picked up and get an award in the injured worker's favor, then we're in control of the medical treatment. Yeah, then we're going to the doctor that employ injured workers, going to the doctors that we recommend and the doctors that that they've picked on their own. The employer sends the injured worker to a panel physician and doctor like they're supposed to, then they control the doctors on that. They decide who gets to be on that panel, and the injured worker is going to doctors that they've handpicked. So in Georgia, their employers are supposed to have a posted panel of physicians with at least 6 doctors on that list. One is supposed to be an orthopedic. No more than 2 can be industrial clinics, and the employer, that's a huge benefit to them because they get to pick the 6 places that are on that list and control where an injured worker goes if somebody gets hurt on their job.
Interesting. You know what, and I like that idea right there. As the boss, as the employer, owner of the company, I want to be able to, control the circumstance. So, hey, let's just jump on this. I tell you, being a small business operator, I've only had one injury. And for me, I was grateful to be able to use my workman's comp that I paid for.
Right.
And it's one of those things where everybody, as far as I was concerned, I was like ecstatic. I went to workman's comp. Everything was great. Employee, did well, and it was a win-win-win. And so I have a big problem when somebody gets hurt on the job, and people start saying, "Hey, well, we'll just handle it. We'll just handle it between us," and it never goes well. Somebody sooner or later says, "Well, listen, man, you've gone to that doctor 3 times. I think that's more than enough." for your broken collarbone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you know, it's just do it right. It's easier for everybody.
Right. And I see employers sometimes it's they think they're doing the right thing, or they think they're trying to, you know, do right by the person, and they don't want to put it on their comp coverage. They don't want their premiums to go up, but you know, I think it's just something, some minor medical issue that's going to go away. And then, along comes a surgical recommendation, and that blows things out of the water, and, you know, where you thought you were going to pay for two or three office visits, and now you're looking at a $50,000 surgery. You should have reported it to your comp coverage. And
yep.
So, you know, that's... that can be an issue for both employees and employers. And the way workers' comp is supposed to work, and the way it works the majority of the time, is somebody go, you know, they get hurt on the job, they get the medical treatment they need. If they're out of work, they're, you know, compensated some amount for the time that they're gone, and then they go back to work, and the claim's over. They get better, and they continue with their employer and go about their business. I had an employee who... we actually had a comp claim against us, and the employee, she was able to treat though, and she continued working here, and everything went smoothly. So I think the vast majority of cases, with workers' comp, that's what happens. Especially if you have an employer who follows the rules and does what they're supposed to do. So I can
yeah.
You know, and in my town, you can generally tell who the good employers are, because we don't ever have comp claims against them. There are a number of employers I could name or list out, and I never get calls from potential clients against those particular employers, because they treat their employees well. And so,
right.
You know, as long as people do that, it's they can really keep lawyers out of cases if they just do the right things for their employees.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny you should say that, because if insurance companies behave the way they should, and if corporations behave the way they should, a lot of lawyers would be having to look for work other places.
You're absolutely right. It's surprising to me. I mean, insurance companies seem to act in their own worst interest sometimes, especially with workers' comp after surgery. I don't understand. It's not beneficial at all for the insurance carrier to have treatment delayed or denied following a surgery. I mean, you want to get somebody
right
into physical therapy, get them into rehab as soon as possible. Get them back to work. Get them to where they're doing better. And I see over and over and over again where somebody goes and, you know, they'll have a shoulder surgery and then they don't get into physical therapy for 6 weeks. Well, at that point, I mean, the shoulders, I mean, it's not going to be nearly in the condition it could have been in. And then that just, it sets up the state, you know, sets the stage for another, second surgery and a third surgery. And it just ends up costing the insurance carrier more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, from an employee, the employee point of view, think about it. You're going to make me go through another surgery, or, you know, all this other stuff. I'm going to be – it's a hassle for everybody. And you're right. I don't understand that either. I mean, insurance companies sometimes, like you said, they work against their best interest because, look, the guy just got out of surgery or knee surgery. They have to go into physical therapy. And my wife had a knee replacement. And they had her in physical therapy that afternoon.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work. And I'm assuming that was probably not a workers' comp claim if they got her into therapy that quickly.
Yeah, it was not. But it's amazing. It's amazing what insurance companies will do to try to save a couple of bucks. And it's just, again, you know, the world would be such a different place. Speaking of workman's comp, let's talk about this, because you've been doing this for a while. Has workman's comp, the laws surrounding workman's comp, has that changed from when you started practicing?
Yes, and in my opinion, not in a good way. I think it's kind of, you know, death by a thousand cuts for injured workers. I think it's you know, it's been injured workers' rights in Georgia have been chipped away and chipped away, and that's just the current political environment here. Fortunately, I think we're the tides are starting to turn, and you know, the that's I think going to change course in the next year, 2 or 3 years. One huge impact that you know, that we've seen since I've started practice is a cap on medical treatment. Previously in Georgia, if you were hurt on the job, you had a you know, as long as the doctors indicated that your treatment was related to your work accident, you were entitled to lifetime medical treatment for that. And they have since capped that at 400 weeks from the date of the injury, unless your case is catastrophic. And generally, you know, there's several categories of catastrophic cases. There are cases that are presumed catastrophic if you're paralyzed or missing a limb or blind or burned over a certain amount of your body. You know, those cases are going to, you know, they're going to get picked up as catastrophic. There are a whole host of other types of cases that, you know, somebody may have a neck or a back surgery, and you know, not a ton of education, an extensive work history doing, you know, different things. They may have been limited to one type of labor for their entire work history, and then they have a serious back surgery or something that prevents them from going back to doing that type of work, and that's you know, that's catastrophic in a sense. And you know, but if that case doesn't get picked up as catastrophic, that person is limited to 400 weeks of medical treatment from the date of their injury, and then it's, you know, then they're on their own, or it's on the government to pick up. You know, that person is going to have to get on disability or, you know, in Medicare, or go some other route other than through the insurance company who should be paying for it. So that's one big change that we've seen since I started practice.
Wow, that is interesting. I'm surprised that the that they allowed that, because I would think that the you know, if I'm running the government, the last thing I want is more people on my roll payroll.
And then the other interesting thing is Medicare. One of the big question marks when they passed that 400 week cap was, yeah, we have to do things called Medicare set asides when we settle a workers' comp case. If somebody's on Medicare, or if they have a reasonable expectation of becoming Medicare eligible within 30 months of the date of the settlement, and the settlement amounts over a certain threshold, we have to, the insurance company, the workers' comp insurance carrier, has to fund a separate account that the injured worker is responsible for, you know, setting up a separate checking account with that money and paying for medical treatment, using that money before Medicare kicks in. Well, the big question mark when they passed that 400-week cap was, you know, is Medicare for MSAs, are they going to honor this 400-week cap? And yeah, because arguably and likely, the, you know, injured worker's going to be receiving medical treatment beyond that 400 weeks, and then Medicare is going to be responsible for it. Are they going to be okay with that? And CMS, I think last fall, came out with a decision that they were going to honor Georgia's 400-week cap and you know, pick up the tab for these comp carriers that were getting off the hook and you know, closing out treatment after 400 weeks. So I was kind of surprised to see CMS do that, but they did last fall.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when something goes against common sense, this is where politics fail us. This is when somebody made money off that deal, and either A, they're going to get caught, or B, they're not, right? So sooner or later, something's going to find out, you know, and you know, it's just ridiculous. And this is, you know, we see this time and time again, not only just in our local politics, but there in Washington, D.C., where something goes against common sense. And you got to scratch your head and go, what? And yeah, somebody made bank on that deal. That's incredible. Let me ask you this. We've been talking a lot about, you know, what to do, you know, right after an injury. What are some of common mistakes that you see people make when handling workman's comp or personal injury cases by themselves? Talk about that a little bit.
Going to the doctors that the insurance adjusters recommend. I routinely see insurance adjusters make people think that they have to go to a certain doctor or they're limited to a certain doctor. Well, that's just not the case. And changing doctors without getting an attorney's input before they change doctors. I would never recommend that anybody go to a doctor that an insurance adjuster recommends or to change doctors, because you have such limited rights when it comes to your medical treatment for a workers' comp claim in Georgia. You know, not only are you limited to the panel physicians that your employer posts, assuming they have a properly formatted panel with the orthopedic and having the certain types of doctors and practices that they're supposed to have on the panel, you're already limited. So the only other rights really that you have about medical treatment, once you're on that panel, you only have a right to change one time from a doctor on that panel to another doctor to become your authorized treating physician. You don't want to make that change without getting some input from somebody who knows the doctors, knows the reputations for the doctors on that list, or knows if there's a way to get around that. You know, if the panel's doesn't have the proper information on it like it should, we could possibly get the injured worker in with a doctor of our choosing. The other thing is, fortunately, injured workers in Georgia do have a right to something called a one-time independent medical exam. That's a one-time right, and you don't want to mess that up and go to a doctor that the insurance adjuster suggests for you. I've seen injured workers waste their IME, their one-time right to an IME, going to a doctor that an insurance adjuster picks. In fact, I have some depositions coming up in a case Monday where the nurse on a job picked a doctor for my client, and it happened to not be a doctor on the panel. And so the one of the issues in that case is, is she still entitled to her one-time change from one panel physician to another, because because she's never really used that. I mean, she's changed doctors, but to answer your question, I mean, that's a typical mistake I see. I mean, people changing doctors and doing things at the recommendation of an insurance adjuster who's looking out for the bottom line of the insurance company. That's a big mistake I see in workers' comp cases with people representing themselves.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we kind of started talking about, but I want to kind of circle back to, we started talking about this McDonald's case and how people get the misinformation and so this happens too. Look, somebody has what's known as maybe soft tissue injuries, and by the way, I'm telling you guys, if you having no injury is the best way to go, because sooner or later, there's really like the coffee case scenario. You can't pay me enough money to throw that kind of injury on myself. But anyway, one of the things I want to circle back to is this idea that personal injury attorneys take on, every single case that you guys see. You guys aren't looking for that. From my experience, you guys first of all have an ethical duty. You can lose your entire business if you take on a bad case or if you give your clients bad advice. You're looking for cases that have merit that should be in your practice, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we turn away cases every day. And those are some of the hardest conversations I have to have, explaining to people that they don't have a case. And one reason for that is we pay all the case expenses for our clients. We pay up front for filing fees, witness fees, hiring expert witnesses, deposition transcripts, deposition costs, medical records. all those things we pay up front. If we lose the case, that's money that we've lost. So we don't want to take on a case and spend that money unless we think that you're able to recover that. So it's not beneficial to us to take on frivolous cases or cases without merit, because I don't want to waste my own money. And I only want a case with merit, and I don't want to clog up the system with anything that's not that's not something that should be filed or should be litigated.
Right. And you know what? And I've seen this too. I know from personal experience, people that I personally know who were hurt in an accident, they started feeling better. I mean, they were under a doctor's care. They go through the trouble of getting an attorney. Then, of course, life gets in the way. They start feeling a little bit better. They stop treating, or they stop going to the doctor. And then 5, 6 months, 8 months later, that injury creeps up again, and now they want to go back to that doctor, and they have 6 months of gap there. And this is something that I think people need to be aware about, it that this is a commitment. Either you're in it to get better, because if you're not in it to get better, sooner or later you hurt, I'm wasting your time, your money, like you mentioned, and everybody else's time.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's if it's not just the kind of thing where there's not going to be any work on the client's part, especially if we have to file a lawsuit and get into litigation. I try to give clients a big heads up before we get involved in that we're going to get some stuff, interrogatories, requests for production of documents, requests for admissions. There's going to be some obligation on your part to sit down with us, go over written questions, produce documents, sit for your deposition. It's not, it's not the kind of thing where it's just you turn it over to the attorney and you don't ever have to deal with us again. I mean, if we get into litigation, our client needs to be a team player and be on board with us to get a favorable result for the case.
Yeah. You mentioned something kind of interesting there about trial or court. So let's say out of 100 cases, and I don't know if that's a big enough number, maybe it has to be out of 1,000 cases, but, how many cases actually go to trial?
A small percentage. I would say less than 5% would be a fair estimate. I'd say out of our cases, about 90% of them were able to get settled without having to file a lawsuit. We have to file lawsuits in probably 10% of cases, and in those, less than 5% actually get into a courtroom. Normally, most of these cases get litigated and litigate your depositions and discovery, and we get down to the eve of trial, and the insurance companies seem to act a lot more favorable the closer we get to a courtroom is usually how it goes.
Sure. And sometimes, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I'm not an attorney, but sometimes don't you have to file a lawsuit not because you intend to go to court, but because you have to preserve the time frame, the statute of limitations of a case?
That's correct. Yeah. In fact, a number of cases we have to file just to make sure that that the case is preserved. And I'm hopeful when we file cases that hopeful that a lot of them can get resolved pre-trial, but from the time we file it until the case is resolved, we're preparing it for trial and making sure that everything is done to dot the I's and cross the T's and do that. Even if we have to file just because a statute's about to run, we still give that case whatever it needs to see it through and get a good result.
Yeah, because no matter what, you're never sure which case is not going to go to trial. You got to prepare for all of them. The way it always works out, it's just the way life is. The The case that you know is not going to go to trial is always the case that ends up going to trial, and the one that you're you're ready to battle tooth and nail for is the one that always settles. So you just never know.
That's exactly right.
All right, William Underwood, Trey, to his friends and clients. I want to thank you so much for stopping by. It's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to have you back again.
All right. Thank you for having me, Burton. Enjoyed it.
All righty. Good stuff there from lawyer William Underwood III, William F. Underwood III. I like his Georgia style there. And it's important for us. Look, we're all in business. It's important for us to know our rights. I mentioned this before. It's important for us to know our rights. It's important to know, to take care of our family, things of that nature. The older I get, I guess call it getting a little bit smarter. You know, not that I'm looking for trial, not that I'm looking for, you know, whatever something, but I've come to the point where I know that I'm always better off calling an expert and getting their opinion. I may not act on their opinion, but at least I have it there as an option. So if you have questions about workman's comp, if you have questions about a personal injury case, you know, these are the kind of things that you don't want to, you know, guess about. This is the kind of stuff that you want to make sure that you have the facts firmly in your hand, because let me tell you, I know from seeing people around me who suffer in silence when they shouldn't have to. It's ridiculous. For heaven's sakes, there's just no reason for that. And let me give out the website. It's WilliamUnderwoodLaw.com. WilliamUnderwoodLaw.com. If you have questions, trail points in the right direction. And like I said, it doesn't hurt to know what the deal is. As always, my friends, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate you listening to our show every day. I appreciate you sharing it. And to me, it's a huge compliment, a huge hug, a high five, if you will, when you guys take a second or two and share the show. Let's help everybody we can. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.